That's so sad. I just heard about George's dad. And again, just warm thoughts about how much I enjoy working with George Norrie all the time and the whole team. In fact, I've got kind of an announcement about that coming up on Coast to Coast a little bit later on this hour. I don't know where you are tonight, but I know that here in the upper Midwest, we're hit with a pretty heavy snowstorm. I had to go out driving a little bit earlier. I was driving my youngest son's girlfriend back to her house, which is on the other side of town, and I've got, the appropriate vehicle for this type of weather, and it was still tricky out. And saw more than, I don't know, half dozen cars that had slid off of on ramps or off ramps and were on their side, people being helped out. So just, wherever you're going, it's worth getting there in one piece, even if it means going a little bit slower, and get over to one side if you have to, and let people pass you safely, and everybody will get through this all right. I know that there's been some pretty severe weather around the country this week, and so thank you wherever you are for making us a part of your night. I promise it'll be interesting and entertaining, and especially tonight, where I think we're going to hit new ground on a subject that has been around for a little while, but not nearly enough people are talking about. And partly because it's hard to get facts on it. And I say that too, in that most of what we're going to talk about tonight is anecdotal. So there's not a lot of empirical data on what we're about to talk about. That is, how much the government, assuming the federal government in most cases, is track how much they're tracking Americans through GPS devices that are simply, through magnetic connection or whatever, just implanted on a car, just on the basis they want to know where you're going, they want to know where you're heading, and they don't feel the need, it seems at this point, to let us know who's being tracked and who isn't. But so far, the laws allow them to do this. Don't they? And why don't we write a law that says that they can't? We'll get into that coming up. First, we'll tell you the story, the most recent version of this story, the mysterious GPS devices that are just appearing on people's cars and how they're finding out about it and what you can do about it coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Well, the subject of GPS trackers has been around the net for a while. It may have even popped up a couple of times on Coast to Coast, but I've never heard a whole show about it until tonight. And I don't hear them all, but I think I would have heard more about it. I kept reading about it in Wired magazine. Kim Zetter is a reporter for Wired, and she joins us here. Good evening, Kim. Okay. So, Kim, I think it was originally your piece back a couple of months ago, and then there was another piece, kind of a year-end piece that Wired has out right now that mentions it again. Can you tell the story of how GPS tracking devices came to your attention at Wired?
Well, it was about a year ago. There was someone who had found a device on his car, and he posted pictures of it on a website, the forum called Reddit. And he posted the pictures because he wasn't sure what it was. It was basically just sort of crowdsourcing, trying to ask people if they could identify what it was. He and his roommates thought maybe it was a bomb initially. They didn't really know what. And some of the readers helped identify that it was a GPS tracker. They even identified the make and model of it. So I contacted him, and it turns out that after he had posted the pictures, the FBI showed up at his place to retrieve it.
Okay, so they say the FBI showed up and said, "That's ours, and we want it back." So they cop to it. Okay, so not I mean, how about that for hubris? Yes, we've been tracking you, and now we want our tracking device back. That's government property,
Right,
pal.
it's ours.
Yeah. Okay. So we are protecting the identity of that particular individual, correct?
No, he was identified. His name is Yasser Afifi.
Okay, thank you. Because I've heard conflicting stories about this, and I actually saw another piece that somebody had sent me when we made the announcement this week, and so they're kind of becoming conflated in my mind.
Yeah,
There
I
have been
read a
other,
recent story.
right,
A
because
more
there's
recent
another,
story.
okay, that's it. Then there's another story of somebody else who didn't want to be identified, who also found a tracking device under his car.
Right. He had read my story from a year ago after he had found one on his car, and so he contacted me to tell me about the one that he'd found. We sent a photographer. He's in San Jose, California, so it wasn't that far from us. We sent a photographer to go take pictures of it, and after we had taken pictures of it, it was the next day, he discovered that someone had swapped out the device and replaced it with another GPS tracker.
Okay. An upgrade?
Yeah, a slightly different model. The first one appeared to be a model that has a battery embedded inside of it, and those tend to have to be changed because the batteries, don't last very long. So the one they swapped it out for had an attached battery that lasts longer.
I was waiting for you to say that it had a device that they were siphoning off power from his car battery to charge it.
There are different kinds of GPS trackers, and these were both of these were underneath his car in the back near the bumper. But there are apparently GPS trackers that don't need a battery, and they are wired into the car's battery so that they're basically using the juice from the car.
And they are attached magnetically.
Yes.
Okay. So knowing what you know, and then having seen your pieces and then gone online and tried to find out more myself, it seems as though, at least in, if not all of the cases that I've read, a plurality of the cases, the FBI appeared to be tracking young men who had Muslim-sounding names or were Muslim.
No.
Okay, tell me about this.
I wrote another story about a woman who had found one on her car, and she was an environmental activist. So the only one so far was an Arab American, was the first one that I wrote about, Yasser Afifi. And he believed the reason that he was being tracked was his father was, kind of prominent in the Arab American community, but his father was dead. He died a year earlier. And Yasser tended to fly back to Egypt. That's where his brothers were occasionally. And so he felt like someone had indicated to the FBI that they thought he might be a national security threat. Very vague tip. No, nothing, concrete or anything. And they were tracking him for at least 6 months minimum. The one that I wrote about recently, who found on his truck, he believes that it might be because he bought the truck from his cousin, and his cousin fled to Mexico about a year ago, and his cousin may have been involved in drugs. We believe that probably the second one was put on there by the DEA, not the FBI, maybe.
Okay.
And the woman, of course, was being tracked for her environmental activities.
So we think different agencies, different devices, but then under whose auspices are they planted? I mean, what's the law that says they can or they can't? And if the FBI can put one on and then just simply say, we'll take that back now, are you obligated to have to give it back to them?
It is government property. And so technically they could, charge you for it. There are people who said, they joke around and said, well, what if I just throw it in the lake or put it on another car, put it on a bus? They'd have to, catch you in the act. They could charge you for it. You wouldn't have to pay for it. Who knows? In the case of the woman, they did try to collect it from her, and she basically just refused to turn it over, and they kind of abandoned it. They never followed through on it. Of course, in the case of Yasser Afifi, they demanded it back, and he gave it back. So with regard to what law allows them to do this, you can, in the course of an investigation, these aren't, we hope that they're not just sort of randomly putting these on anyone's vehicle, that, they are people that may be suspected of some kind of activity, criminal activity or whatever. In the case of Yasser Afifi, we don't know if there was any criminal activity there at all. But you can, some states do have rule that they require a warrant to get these. But other states have required that you don't need a warrant. And the reasoning is that because you're just tracking a car on public streets, you're not doing anything that you wouldn't be able to do by tailing a car. So police don't need a warrant to follow you if they're doing surveillance.
Right.
And so they think that just the technology allows them to follow you in the same manner, and it's on a public street, and they can even put this on your vehicle when it's parked in your private driveway. So that has been the ruling of some courts. Now, there's a Supreme Court case now that will hopefully rule against this. This is involving someone who was convicted of drug dealing, and I think it was in Virginia or Washington, D.C. They had put one on his Jeep. In this case, it's ironic that the authorities actually did obtain a warrant in this case, but the warrant ran out before they put it on the vehicle. I don't know why they let it run out, but the day after the warrant ran out, they put it on the vehicle. And higher court overruled this conviction on the basis that they didn't have a warrant. And the court also said that they felt that this was a violation of an expectation of privacy, that it's not the same as a car doing, police car doing surveillance, because with the surveillance, there's going to be limited surveillance. And presumably, they're going to know who's driving the car because they're going to be watching it. In case of a GPS tracker, it's possible to do 24-hour surveillance over long periods of time, 6 months, a year, and you don't know who's driving the car. So you're gathering data on whoever is driving the vehicle, and you can collect a lot of information about that person. And the judge was saying, you know, you could collect information about whether they go to AA meetings, whether they have outpatient treatments, whether they're having an affair. There's a lot of data that can be collected there. So that's why the judge felt that this was very invasive. And the Obama administration has gone to the Supreme Court and said, we want you to reverse this case and rule that we don't need a warrant. We want to be able to use these without a warrant. So it was argued before the Supreme Court earlier this month or earlier in November, and the justices now have to decide on that.
So to use that same justification, though, and again, we're talking with Kim Zetter of Wired Magazine. We've been reading about these GPS tracking devices that have been found on cars, most recently in California. But if you go on the internet, you'll find various forums where people are talking about this and people that swear that this had happened to them. In some cases, by the way, Kim, I don't know if you've seen this, but from people who say that this has happened to them privately, and one woman wrote extensively in a privacy forum that she just found it more than coincidental that every time she showed up someplace, her ex-husband, with whom she had been in conflict, showed up shortly thereafter. And she was convinced that he had put some sort of device on her car as well and hadn't really thought about it until she read, I think it was your piece, that made her try to connect the dots. But
sure, he could also be tracking her phone, though, as well. There are programs that you can load onto someone's cell phone and
sure.
Track them. I mean, there are a lot of ways that he could be tracking her.
But in this case, to see this and to use the government's justification that, well, we could be tracking you, we could be following you, we don't need your permission. We don't need a warrant. If we're going to hire a helicopter to fly over you all day long, we could do that and nobody could stop us.
Right.
They could do the same thing with us as individuals. They could plant a device on us on our back, theoretically, and walk up and say, hey, how are you doing, mister? And pat you on the back and put a device on you that they could use to follow you around for the rest of the day. And they wouldn't need a warrant for that either.
There are small, I don't know about that. There are small devices that, you know, you can slip into a purse or a briefcase, whatever. But in that case, you know, you're talking about following someone once they go into their private domicile. So I don't believe that that is I don't believe that that's the same.
I don't know.
It's not the same as putting it on a car when you're putting it on a person and following them inside.
You may be right, but there are also lots of times when the under surveillance police have to turn off a phone call. They have to turn off things that their warrant doesn't include. They could just turn it off when you go into the house and turn it right back on again when you leave again. And they wouldn't be in violation of that to use their justification. And the only reason I say this is because reading some of these privacy forums, I mean, there were many people who had serious concerns about things that they felt had been happening or things that they had suspected, and that our awareness of them hasn't caught up to the reality of their use. For example, until I saw your piece, I think it's one of the first pieces I've seen in print in any mainstream publication. Is anybody else picking up the story thread as you're telling it in Wired?
Well, there was never, I think, a focus on the technology per se in the way that we did. There were stories, you know, when I first started looking at this, I found some stories in Colorado among environmental activists there who had found some on their cars. But in that case, you know, the stories were focused on these individuals and why they were being sort of harassed. They felt that they were being harassed. So it wasn't so much on the technology. We were really just interested in the technology because we cover, you know, civil liberties issues in relation to technology. And it's, we also found it, you know, pretty egregious that you can place one of these on without a warrant. If you've got a warrant, you're having to convince a judge that you've got probable cause, and you're going to have to come back after a certain amount of time and convince the judge that you still need it longer. So, I mean, it's a small hurdle for them to get over, but it's still a hurdle. And it's much different than, so, for instance, the case of Yasser Afifi, where he believes he was under surveillance for 6 months. With no justification that we could determine. So, you know, it really is when you don't have any kind of oversight. And by the way, there's no statistics being collected on how many of these are used and how often
right.
they're used.
Right.
We have a law that requires, for instance, the Justice Department to give to Congress once a year some statistics on the use of national security letters, on FISA warrants, things like that. We don't have any requirement that the statistics on the use of GPS trackers are reported. So there's really no oversight in how they're being used.
Any proposal at a national, at a federal level to address this issue in Congress? Did you hear from anybody that said, tell us more about it?
No, I haven't heard anything that would force the issue. I mean, the Supreme Court, you know, in terms of, you know, requiring a warrant, I mean, we're hoping that they will, you know, in a reasonable way in that. But again, that will only put some small protections on it. It won't tell us how often they're being used or in what kinds of cases they're being used.
So, yeah, the possibility exists that if the Supreme Court rules against the need for a warrant, sure. Then it would take somewhat of an act of Congress or state legislators to get involved to start carving out this privacy back for people.
The Supreme Court is the final arbiter.
Well, I understand. No, I understand that. No. I get that. But there's other ways that even if they rule, that other ways that we can carve out, well, this under these circumstances or under those circumstances. I mean, we've seen this done with, obviously, with abortion laws and other things where it says, yes, it's legal, but other restraints can be made on it. And at least when it comes to this, maybe some creating this conversation at the state level will help to somehow be able to further the conversation that people should be aware of this could be going on and that what their rights would be if they found it. I mean, what if they find it right now?
Well, I want to get back to your congressional thing, because one thing that's not going to be addressed by the Supreme Court, and this is important for people to know, Supreme Court is only going to address a law enforcement use of these devices. They won't address private use. So
there you
a private
go.
Investigator can use these, as you pointed out, this woman who believed that her husband might have used one. The Supreme Court isn't going to be deciding on that. And that's, you know, a huge hole here in the privacy issue. And that's something where Congress could step in and rule in that way and make it illegal for someone to put a device like this on a car.
So just in the time that we have left, let's say I find one, I just pull it off my car, I put it in the driveway, and I just jump up and down on it about 50 times because it's not mine. I didn't put it on the car. I mean, even if the Supreme Court rules that there's no warrant necessary to put it on my car, what's the law that says it has to stay there or that if I find it, I have to give it back to them?
Yeah, when Yasser found his, we asked a number of civil liberties groups and lawyers about this. And, you know, they all said, well, technically it is government property, and if you ruin government property, you could be charged. But I think it's probably rare, you're not taking a high risk, I think. I think for them to actually pursue that, especially if they don't have a warrant and there's no probable cause for them to have been tracking you in the first place, I think that's kind of an uphill battle for them to.
Well, I'll go back to what you said at the beginning about he didn't know it was government property or even what it was until he put it on Reddit.
Right.
And so unless it's labeled, this is government property, do not touch, or if you find this, you are obligated to call this number.
Right.
Unless they label it at that, it's just something stuck on your car.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't.
Exactly.
So I'd say
he thought it was a bomb.
Yeah. Smash it first and find out later, I think. But
right. They're not labeled, by the way.
Yeah. So if they're not labeled, then how can they claim you should know it's government property?
Yeah.
You should know we're that devious that we should track you. You should have suspected we were able to do that. Well, thank you, K. Kim Zetter for setting the table for us tonight, reporter for Wired Magazine. You can find out more about that by linking up to her at our website, coasttocoastam.com. Lauren Weinstein will pick up the ball coming up in just a minute. We'll run with it here. A privacy expert appears frequently on Coast to Coast, weighing in with his thoughts about the government using GPS tracking devices on people without search warrants. And for that matter, too, some of these other things that we're talking about. I mean, why couldn't they theoretically just put a tracking device on you while you're out in public and just turn it off when you get into your house? They already know you're in your house anyway. And that way they could do that unless we take a stand. So let's take a stand tonight. Plus, I got a little announcement. I'll get to that coming up next. And again, sad thoughts tonight about the passing of George's dad. My condolences to the Norrie family. We'll get back to coming up later on. We'll do some open line calls later on tonight on Coast to Coast. So I mentioned last week and tweeted about it a couple of times here this week. At Deacon Punnett is my Twitter account, about an announcement I'm going to have to make, and I'm going to have to do it in just a minute. And Lauren Weinstein is going to have to, or Weinstein, gosh, why do I never remember? I can do this every time Lauren comes on. We'll have to wait just a moment, but I'll get to that coming up next. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Just for sticks, earlier in the week, I was thinking about the announcement tonight, and I sent out a message to my tweeps, my followers on Twitter, and I just asked them, I said, what do you think the announcement's going to be? They're so funny. You're going to record an album with UFO Phil. Somebody wrote, no, but I'm open to that. You're outing me as a reptoid, writes R. Stevens. I wasn't going to do that, but hey, y'all, R. Stevens on Twitter is a reptoid. Jacula the Vampire Dog hits number one on the New York Times bestseller list. Wouldn't that be nice? You found Major Ed Dames's pot of Art Bell gold. No. You are D.B. Cooper. Nope, although that would be fun. You were on the grassy knoll. You were Bigfoot in the Patterson movie. It would take two of me to be the Bigfoot in the Patterson movie. You'll be doing Saturday nights from George's new Hawaii studio. That sounds like a good time. You found Elvis alive and well and living in the basement of your church in Minnesota. You'll be hosting the Christmas Eve show. Actually, yes, I will be doing that coming up Christmas Eve. We will be live on Coast to Coast, and I will be hosting that. And you will be doing the prediction shows this year, part one and part two, New Year's the day before, New Year's Eve, and then New Year's Eve. Yes, those are both accurate predictions and good guesses. But no, not what this is about. I'll be as quick as I can here, but I just want to establish that I think this is a positive thing. And I think I'm pretty much on the record as having said for a long time that within every yes, there is a no, and vice versa. That we say yes to apple pie, but we're also saying no to cake or to cobbler or whatever. We don't vocalize it, you know, by listing the choices to which we're saying no. It's just, you know, it's easy not to be mindful of all the things that we're saying no to. But it's true. We are saying no to things, even if we don't articulate it. Another way of looking at that is that by saying yes to dessert, we're also saying no to culinary boredom, or saying no to the question, is this the day I'm going to start that new diet? And it's kind of the same thing with the whole good news, bad news paradigm. You know, a few weeks ago, my oldest son had an awesome college swim meet, which was good news for him, his team, and his parents. But his, you know, his best event times were bad news for somebody else that was in the pool, the opposing team, and those boys' parents, right? And, it, you know, vice versa, when it doesn't go his way. And it's with that in mind that I need to pass along some good news, bad news tonight on Coast to Coast. Due to causes that are both natural and not, it has become increasingly more difficult for me to hear, a condition which started somewhat mildly in the fall of 2009, but has gotten worse since 2010. My hearing problems might have come from decades of wearing headphones for hours and hours every single day. It might be hereditary. It might be from an experimental form of an antibiotic that I was once prescribed a couple years ago that gave me a banging headache and ringing in my ears, or a combination of all three. I really don't know. Regardless of the cause, I'm here tonight to say that I am losing my hearing somewhat dramatically and that my tinnitus continues to get worse. So some people experience hearing loss and some people develop tinnitus, a noticeable ringing or buzzing in the ears, but not everybody gets both. And this is my case. A few months ago, new hearing tests revealed that my loss is now in the moderate to severe category and getting worse. Compounding that, I have what is termed grade 5 tinnitus. That is, my ringing buzz never stops. It cannot be masked. Quiet activities are subject to disruption, and sleeping patterns are completely disturbed. As if, you know, either of those things are not bad enough alone. Adding to the difficulty of experiencing hearing loss and tinnitus at this level together is that I experience these low-grade headaches from the mental and physical stress, and these low-grade headaches tend to last weeks. It's really hard. I can actually illustrate for you a little bit, and hang on, Lauren, I'm coming, a little bit about tinnitus, and I only do this for you because it's radio, and actually, because of Coast to Coast, I happen to have this weird app in my phone. Remember a couple years ago, we had a guy on who wrote a book called Get High Now Without Drugs. And it was both an app and then also a book about the things that you can do to kind of, you know, shift your mind around for relaxation or to create kind of altered states just using visual tricks and auditory tricks. And so there was this app that came along with it, and I bought it, or it came free, I can't remember, but it's great. And I kind of remembered when he was on many years ago, I kind of remember that some of the tones that were in this app that we played that night on Coast to Coast were really annoying. And I just thought, I wonder, maybe one of them will be close to what I'm hearing. So I went back and I found it, still had it loaded in, and I found one, and it's pretty close. It's not exactly what I experienced, but you'll get an idea if I hit this button here and then I turn this up. You can hear. There you go. That's about what I hear 24/7, 365. That. It's kind of a slightly softer version of it. Even under the best care of traditional and non-traditional medical practitioners, my hearing is continuing to deteriorate and the tinnitus continues to get louder. This is not a good trade-off. So it is what it is. And I'm doing everything I can to try to curtail it. But because of the increasing severity of the hearing loss, the consensus among my GP and my ENT and my audiologist is that I have to be aggressive in how I handle this. So I am using, or I have tried, psychologists to increase my coping skills, massage therapists for the headaches, a hypnotist, didn't work, a pain specialist, sleep clinic. I'm going to be going in for acupuncture coming up. All options are being pursued. But sleep and these headaches are really what are becoming the issue. And like many of you, I'm sure there's a lot of insomniacs out there that listen to Coast to Coast. I function quite well on about half of the amount of sleep that others might need or get. I'm a short sleeper, is what they call that. I'm a short sleeper by nature. I am simultaneously a night owl and an early bird, something the Wall Street Journal referred to in an article as the sleepless elite. Whether this is entirely by nature or nurture, I couldn't tell you, but I do know that those few extra waking hours every day and the ability to turn the need for sleep on and off has made me a very productive man over the years and allowed me to be part of Coast to Coast AM since 1998, while I was also getting my master's degree, while I was doing a full-time radio job, while I was serving a church and writing books and being a regular part of the production of several TV shows, and then also being what I hope is an active, good father and a husband and a free consultant to the world. But in the past, this has never been exhausting. It has become that, though, because of the constant ringing in the ears. And over the last 2 years, even my 4 to 5 hours of nightly sleep has just become elusive. I'm just not even getting that. There are treatment strategies and sound therapies that I should be doing more that might help me refocus my mind off of the tinnitus and reduce the stress related to the hearing loss, which is why for my overall health, I asked Coast to Coast to start searching for my weekly replacement a few months back. And kindly and graciously, Trevor Oliver and Lisa Lyon, who program and produce Coast to Coast, asked me to consider the once monthly Sunday night slot that Art Bell used to do, and that seemed like a fit. So starting in January, you'll be hearing me only on the second Sunday of every month, kind of in the Coast to Coast host emeritus slot, as I continue to be more aggressive with these treatments. And I have a weekday morning radio job, too. A show I co-host with my wife, so that has to come first. But because of these circumstances, even my other radio family has accommodated my situation by creating a headphone-less studio so that I no longer have to have the direct audio onslaught into my ears. And that's helping, too. I hope I never have to leave radio completely, and that's what I'm fighting for. So giving up Coast to Coast on a weekly basis is hard enough, but the time has come. Since starting with Coast back in 1998, when I was the first person other than Art Bell to have his name included in the title of the show after the Coast to Coast AM part. Coast to Coast AM with Ian Punnett went live on Sunday nights, and I was proud of that badging. I've loved being on this team as either a starter, a bench player, a fifth man, whatever was needed. When I left my weekly Sunday night post on Coast to Coast in December of 2001 in order to concentrate on finishing seminary and then eventually to move to Minnesota, I was excited to see George Norrie take over, and he credits me with being a good luck charm for him for his future success on Coast to Coast, and I have never disagreed with him, and I never will. I will take complete credit for being a good luck charm. And because I had to say no to a weekly show in 2001, the world got to say yes to George Norrie and has been saying yes to him ever since. So here it is exactly 10 years later, and I'm having to say no to a weekly show again, this time on Saturday. But that just means the world will say yes to John B. Wells, who takes over the Saturday Night Show as of January. And I hope my departure will be as lucky to him as I was to George Norrie. He's a good guy. He has a great radio presence, and he deserves this big-time chance. I think it's totally awesome. So while it's bad news for me that I have to reduce my presence on Coast to just a dozen or so appearances a year, it's good news for you that you'll have a fresh, exciting new weekly host, and that's always a good thing for the life of a show like Coast to Coast. And while it's bad news that this ringing in my ears never goes away, there is still more good news in it for me. At least I have really superb health insurance, and I'm grateful for that. I work for good, understanding people, and I'm living in a time when tinnitus treatment is getting even more attention because of the return of hundreds of thousands of servicemen and women who are also struggling with it after doing a hitch in Iraq or Afghanistan. And the difference between me and my many sisters and brothers of the buzz is that their tinnitus, their sleep disorders, their life disruption not only comes with the sound, but also, in many cases, memories they might prefer to forget. One soldier I heard speak once said that the hardest thing about his tinnitus is that not only was it brought on by an explosion under his Humvee in which he was riding, but that the sound always brings back the images of what happens to his buddies afterward. And I never have to deal with that. Makes me sad. Because of the volume of tinnitus sufferers, if you will, volume, get it? They're all at every VA, in every VA waiting room. Maybe someday better treatments, maybe someday a cure could be found for tinnitus. And the bad news for so many of our troops might bring about good news for all of us, maybe someday. In the meantime, I have a bunch of shows coming up this month. I'm also having a pretty good time playing around on Twitter. I send stories, photos, observations, and laughs on a daily basis at Deacon Punnett, Deacon Punnett, and I try to tweet back to everybody who writes. So while I anticipate all the warm and wonderful expressions of concerns that many of my tweeps might want to share, it is my request that from this point forward, if you would, I'd rather not spend any time talking about it. One of the main strategies of tinnitus treatment is to not focus on it. So while I appreciate good old-fashioned human words of kindness and concern, either in phone calls or tweets, let's just not talk about it. That having been said, on the phone, email, street, at book signings, or at Deacon Punnett on Twitter, it'll be good to hear from you. In fact, I think it's fair to say it will be good to hear anything while I can. So thank you so much, Lauren, for your patience. And Lauren Weinstein, who is one of my favorite guests here on Coast to Coast, mostly because he has great patience as I always sort through his name every time he comes on. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, Ian. Hi. How are you doing? How are you doing this evening beyond beyond the obvious here?
I couldn't be doing better. You know, it's so interesting to hear about this subject, and immediately I thought of you. And of course, people most frequently think of you when we talk about privacy concerns in the work that you've always done online and with other things related to the government. I've never heard you speak about this GPS story of whether it's the DEA or the FBI putting GPS tracking devices underneath people's cars without a warrant. But I'm assuming you've been following the story, too.
Oh, yeah. It's been developing for a long time. It hit ahead recently when the issue finally got in front of the Supreme Court, because there have been all kinds of conflicting court decisions on it in different jurisdictions. So there was a very, very interesting and in some cases kind of amusing repartee at the Supreme Court on the topic very recently.
Well, talk about that. Tell us, I mean, I kind of feel like I'm playing catch up on this story, and yet, you know, I also think part of the problem is that there hasn't been really a lot of faces on this story. I mean, there's a lot of people writing about it online, but, you know, this hasn't, whereas, say, like in England, the whole phone hacking scandal, you know, that bunch of celebrities got attached to that. We kind of get a better idea of the royal family and people that we see in movies, what it meant to have their phones hacked. But we haven't really seen, and we've got anonymous people or some people that are, you know, who are writing about it online. We haven't really seen a lot about who has been affected by this GPS tracking story, and not a lot of them are popping up in mainstream news sources.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, it's kind of logical, because if you've been subjected to that kind of activity, you may not really want to seek additional publicity on top of
right.
that. So there have been people who have found these and then taken them apart and shown the results to Wired and things like that. It gets pretty amusing, because then the authorities inevitably show up and say, "Hey, give that back. That thing's
that's
expensive.
Ours."
And you're
right.
Like, you know, luckily the guy hasn't sold it on eBay yet or something.
Right, and he should have, because it's stuck on his car, and there's nothing that says this is government property. There's nothing that says you have to give it back. So it's weird that they show up and go, "Hey, that's ours. You busted us, but give it back."
Well, I was going to say Scalia, who is not very sympathetic to concerns about the tracking per se in public, he seemed to feel that it was an open shut case of trespass when it was actually put on the car, which is an interesting way of looking at it. It's not the tracking that bothers him; it's the trespass that bothers him.
Yeah, I think that's the part that strikes me, is that it kind of cuts across liberal and conservative lines, depending on where you're standing, right? I mean, I could see it totally what Scalia is talking about, but at the same time, it's the Obama administration that's saying, no, we need this.
Well,
we need to be able to have this.
This is completely nonpartisan. I mean, this is the kind of thing that every administration, I don't care if it's Democrat, Republican, or Martian, that they all, once they're in office, they get this mindset, this sort of defense-oriented mindset. And I think part of that relates to the fact that you have an entrenched bureaucracy, within these different agencies who show them the briefing books and read them the Riot Act, basically saying you have to do this. I don't think there's a lot of controversy over the use of GPS with a warrant. I think where this has gotten really controversial is this concept that you don't need a warrant. And this is sort of an outgrowth of this whole you don't have any expectation of privacy in public places mindset. This is leading us now into license plate readers. There's police departments all over the country that are tracking every license plate that goes by and building up big databases of that without any laws or controls really on how they use it. And they're using the same kind of argument. Well, if you're going to drive, I mean, we have a right to keep track of everywhere you go. And soon it'll be face recognition on top of that.
Well, and that's what I want to get to you about, because I know you're always on the cutting edge of these privacy issues anyway. And I've got a few more questions about the unwarranted, and I mean this as a kind of a play on words, the unwarranted attachment of GPS devices on cars. But there's a couple other privacy issues that have popped up this week, too, that I'd love to get your thoughts on. And then later on, we'll go to the phones, not this hour, but the hour after next. And when I open up the phones, we'll do a little open line action toward the end of the show. But I'd love to hear from people who think they've been tracked, because it's not just the government that's doing it. And we'll tell you more about that on the way on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.